Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
In the 80s, hair metal was dominating the radio, but only one band had the guts to dress like bumblebees and toss Bibles into the crowd. The Christian rockers Stryper. This week, we're joined by director Chris White and musician Daniel Smith to talk about how we honestly feel about the Yellow and Black Attack and discuss their new movie, Electric Jesus.
All you need to make the money guaranteed, and you can live off royalties forever.
And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
All right, so Chris and Daniel, you are joining us today to talk about Stryper. But before we get into Stryper, I feel like it's very fitting that we're talking about Stryper today because Matt and I both have seen Electric Jesus, Chris being the director and Daniel being the music director of the movie. And wow, after I watched the movie, I'm like, well, we couldn't be talking about a more perfect band. I don't even know. As far as the song selection, I guess we picked this song. Was this Stryper's biggest song? I was a little unclear on that.
I think it was. I'm pretty sure it's their biggest hit. I know it was a big MTV video hit. I've even talked to Michael Sweet, who is the front man and founder and head songwriter for Stryper. And he said that when this song came out and charted on MTV, like the band had arrived. It was like this huge moment for them.
I think what it comes down to is, as far as charts are concerned, yes, this was absolutely their biggest hit. I think that retrospectively, 30, 40 years after it's come out, I definitely know like kids of my generation of the 90s really clung to Hell with the Devil. I felt like there was a lot of bands a decade after the album came out were really making that the big song. I think it was even included when I was looking through like the history of the band. At one point, Rhino Record put out an album called The Heavy Metal Box, and it was a box of the greatest heavy metal songs of all time. And it had Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, Metallica, Twisted Sister, Poison, and Stryper's To Hell with the Devil on there.
Cool. So,
you know, my impression from watching Electric Jesus was that, was it both of you, Chris and Daniel, who listened to Stryper as kids or teenagers or were influenced by them? What is your background with Stryper?
So I can tell you this. When we started working on the movie, and again, I wrote the screenplay and directed the movie, and in writing the screenplay, wrote lyrics to songs. And then, of course, Daniel comes along and creates music to go with those words. Daniel's background, and he can speak to this in more detail, he was more into like the not Christian hair metal hard rock of that time. I was definitely a Stryper kid. I was definitely into the Christian rock part of it. But Daniel was listening to other bands that everybody else was listening to a lot more than I was. Is that fair to say, Daniel?
Yeah. I mean, I remember listening to Stryper alongside of Def Leppard and Rat and Quiet Riot. But I was 12 years old. I was a child. You know, you can't blame me for that. But I remember it was probably the first Stryper record. I remember listening to that with a bunch of kids who, and none of them were Christian kids. And I think one of them actually showed it to me, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, because the band was overtly Christian. Like the lyrics are very in your face, God and Jesus lyrics for sure.
And I remember that being from my friend who showed that record to me. He's like, well, these guys throw Bibles out, which is lame, but they rock pretty hard. So, you know, they got a pass from, you know, just mate kids who are listening to all kinds of metal. So that's impressive.
Right. Hey, I recently have learned a lot about Stryper, and that's because, strangely enough, a couple of friends of mine run a company that helps people with their Kickstarters to help crowdfund projects. And they are helping Striper with their current Kickstarter project because they're working on a documentary, I believe.
Yeah, they're doing the definitive Striper story documentary. I don't know a lot about it, but I do know that they just launched a Kickstarter.
Right.
So they've been touring and recording pretty much, you know, ever since the 80s. I think there was a minute there where they were quote unquote broken up, but they got back together and, you know, they had a brand new record last year. I think that's when it was called Goddamn Evil.
Yeah. they missed most of the 90s, but they came back. And I think what's great about the Striper story in general to me is, like, as a kid who pretty much grew up on 90s Christian music, then kind of had what I think a lot of people who grew up in that world very young, you start to like second guess and question and figure out where your thought process falls. And I feel like the Striper story has so many moments in it that highlight the problem I had with Christianity a lot of the time, which is like the lack of sense of humor and the lack of letting them do their thing, where it was like they boycotted the band because they played with Bon Jovi. They like got all upset for an album called Goddamn Evil. I think most recently there was a big controversy because they put out a t-shirt that I love that says Kicking the Devil's Ass Since 1983. And I'm like, that's such a good shirt. That's an amazing shirt. But like you go on the comments and it's like, I could have done without the swearing.
That's a really good point. They do have a sense of humor. I really think so.
Yeah. I think Michael Sweet is a bit of a, not even a bit of, he is a provocateur. Like, he is pushing buttons. He's aware he's doing, you know, you can't call your record, you know, that, even To Hell with the Devil. He knows that's going to be controversial. And I think he even, you know, in social media, he will push controversy and set people off a little bit just to make it fun, you know, for him.
Yeah. Hey, to tie this into Electric Jesus a little bit, because Matt and I both watched the movie coming from two different perspectives. Matt, who he brought up the fact that, he did come up, I think kind of like you did, Chris, or at least the impression I get from, I listened to your episode of Geekscape and read some stuff about the movie, and it kind of sounds like you and Matt had a similar upbringing where you listened to this Christian music and you had that background of like you were listening to the Christian version of popular bands and whatever. I watched the movie coming from completely secular background. Like, I knew nothing about religion growing up. So I watched it, and even though I know that this world existed, of these characters, I'm watching them, and I'm a little bit confused almost. Like, you're young people. Why are you... And I think you touched on this a little bit, and I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but you do see these moments of... the characters are now kissing girls in the RV and things like that. So there wasn't this complete separation of being an actual teenager from being a Christian. Whereas the main character, you see him really, really holding on to that. And I can't from my personal experience relate to that as much, but I think that Matt maybe could. And Chris, you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. I had a great conversation with the actor Judd Nelson, who's in the movie.
Right.
He plays a preacher in the movie. And I was just telling him, I was kind of trying to explain me and my church friends back in the day and what that was like. And I was just saying, like, we loved The Breakfast Club. Like, we saw The Breakfast Club. We loved it. We loved you in The Breakfast Club. But we could not do anything that Bender did. Like, like you were a very sinful guy, and we could not behave like you. And he was like, he thought it was kind of funny. And he was like, yeah, but, you know, you were still like drinking and having sex, weren't you? And I was like, no, we were trying not to do those things. We were trying not to drink and get drunk and have sex. That was a different coming of age for us than that. And he found that hilarious and baffling, you know? And I think that's what you're saying, but it was true. We were trying to obey. We were trying to do what the Bible would have us do, or what we were taught the Bible wanted us to do, wanted us to live like. And so that meant, you know, sin avoidance.
I think the time period is huge, too. Obviously, I think there's about a decade gap between the two of us from the eras that we were growing up in. But I think that there was a lot of similarity at that time where, like, currently now I work at a church. I help do their live stream events and I work with their youth group. But one of the reasons that I came into doing the youth group stuff was because as much as I loved my time with the youth group and I loved my time with the church, I thought that looking back on it, there was this element of like, I really cut myself off from people that would have been amazing friends to have had going through high school that I didn't connect with until afterwards. Here's the like fucked up Matt Kelly story for this episode, basically. Like growing up as a kid, you know, you're watching a movie like American Pie, or you're watching these films where it's about losing your virginity. And it's almost this like you lose your virginity and you're so excited to tell your friends. And I remember when I lost my virginity, I called my youth pastor to ask him what I should do about it. Like,
that's so weird.
That's like a scene from Electric Jesus, just not alone.
I mean, like, I was just like, wow. And I was like, my God. But I was like, I don't ever want to put another kid through a situation like that where like they just feel like, oh my God, I've destroyed every good thing that I've done for the last 15 years of my life in one night. Like, and I can tell from at least through the youth group work that I've been doing and from what I've seen, it's definitely not as over the top as it was in the 80s and 90s. Yeah. But man, watching this, I was like, I know exactly what he's talking about, where he's like, it's for spreading the word of God. Like, that we're doing this for Jesus. We're going to make Jesus famous. Yeah. That's the goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I wanted to ask you guys, it seems like we're going to talk about Striper more, but I wanted to talk to you about your process. You mentioned this. The songs in this are amazing. So you're saying that, Chris, you came up with concept and lyrics and you know, collaborated with Daniel. I assume that Striper was the number one influence on what you're going for with the songs. Like, what's is the song called Going Commando for Jesus, or that?
It's called Commando for Christ.
Yeah, that
Commando for Christ.
Incredible. By the way,
I think, and Daniel, why don't you speak to this? Because it wasn't Striper. We weren't trying to make, there were other maybe inspiration and guides for the songs. I think the lyrics were simply devout 15-year-old boy who likes Striper and likes hair metal. And that's where is pretty shaky on theology. And, you know, like they're pretty half baked, I guess, the ideas in the songs. But Where did we go, Daniel? Where did we start with the music?
Well, it followed those lyrics. I mean, I imagine the commando concept, you know, because we talk about this, trying to get inside the head of these kids writing these songs, right? And that's where this came from. So these kids, I'm sure the commando idea came from their love for Striper, right?
Yeah.
This kind of military Armageddon imagery. Musically, I just went back to what I was listening to when I was 12, and my favorite band was Def Leppard, and that album Pyromania was huge. It was massive. And I went back and listened to that, and among probably another 100 metal bands of the time, but really kind of deconstructing what some of those Def Leppard songs were doing. And they're super melodic. And my friend John, who I brought in, old childhood friend, he plays all the electric guitars. He's been a metal kid. You know, I left metal when I was 13, and he stayed with metal until now. So I called him up when Chris and I started getting serious about this and asked John if he still plays guitar. He says, yes, every day. And I said, boy, do I have a job for you. So John nailed all the guitar squeals and the dive bombs and the electric guitar solos and all that. So we had that ingredient of that sound of the electric guitar, which was crucial for the sound. And he taught me that Def Leppard had two guitar players, which I knew, but what was cool about them is they would play parts to create chords that one guitar can't make, right? So we did that, Commando for sure. So just kind of getting into the kind of like science behind hair metal,
right,
if you will.
Right.
But also, and you'll hear this in the songs, we wanted the songs to be good. We didn't think it wouldn't be funny if they were just terrible songs. They would be tedious, right? Mm-hmm. So the trick of the songs in the movie is that the songs are actually good. They're earworms that you can't stop singing, you know, after you see the film. And with that, that's leaning on Daniel's songcraft just as a songwriter and just saying at the heart, what's inside this thing that's dressed up like a big hair metal song is a great melody, is great construction, just great songwriting. So if we strip the songs all the way down, they would still be, you would hear that, oh my gosh, that's just a great melody. That's an incredible chorus, you know, like, so that's part of the trick of the songs too, is leaning on Daniel's ear and his songcraft.
We could get away with that because these kids were sincere. Like, they, even though the lyrics are over the top and ridiculous, they really meant them. They weren't laughing,
right?
You know,
yeah.
So they're also not laughing when they're coming up with these melodies. They're really trying. And wouldn't it be great if they kind of stumbled over some cool stuff? And I think that's how it turned out.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I have to give a shout out as a fan of Daniel's music before this movie. Like, I did not know what to expect. Like, growing up on the music of Daniel when he was doing Danielson and all of his producing work with stuff like Sufjan Stevens and Me Without You, like, I always think of Daniel as, like, kind of this weird Frank Zappa, Daniel Johnston of folk music. So, like, when I'm told he's going to be writing a bunch of hair metal anthems, I had no clue how good it was actually going to be. I was like, this is going to be good. I was still not prepared for how good these songs ended up. I was floored.
You. Yeah, I missed my calling. I should have been a metalhead.
Hey, it's funny, and I picked up on this in the movie. I can't say enough nice things about the movie. If you're listening to this, real quick, when can people see this? We had advanced screeners, but when and how?
The film is on all streaming digital platforms on November 2nd.
Nice.
It's like in the new release category on November 2nd. So you would be able to buy or rent the film. And there's also DVDs and Blu-rays you can buy, hard media as well. So we come out, and that's in the United States, Canada, and the UK. Our release date is November 2nd. And then it'll come to other countries. There's a release schedule just every couple of weeks or months, you know, other people get the movie. But our release date is November 2nd.
That's awesome. I cannot recommend it enough. It's amazing. And I'm not just saying that because you're our guest. I mean, it really, it's an amazing movie. I really think that, like, once the word of mouth starts spreading about this, I think people are really going to, there's a lot of, it's hilarious. And also there's a lot of heart behind it. And I can't say enough nice things, but as I'm watching this movie, and I've thought this so many times before, it's so funny how the 80s hair metal, so much of it, we're calling it metal. Okay, but so much of it is not heavy whatsoever. Like, I feel like the Olivia Rodrigo songs of now are heavier than these songs.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of these fictional songs from the movie are like that. But this song, honestly, that we're talking about from Straper today, this is the least heavy song I've ever heard in my fucking life. This song is ridiculous. Like, that electric piano at the beginning. This is seriously, like, the easiest song to make fun of. People that were in actual heavy bands at this time, like, wouldn't this have been, like, the most, I mean, To Hell with the Devil, yeah, kind of rocks, but this song is so weird. I don't even know, like, it seems like the opposite of metal to me. Someone please explain this song to me, how this falls under a metal category.
Okay, so at the moment this song comes out, this is 86. Mm-hmm. I believe it's on To Hell with the Devil. It's on that record. The bands would have to have at least one or two power ballads.
Right.
It was part of the whole setup. So what you're hearing in Honestly by Stryper is you're hearing their best swing at, you know, a power ballad. The weird thing about Stryper is he's doing a thing in the song where you don't know who's talking to you. Is it a boy talking to a girl, or is it Jesus talking to you?
Always.
And you gotta just, I mean, you can parse it both ways. You can listen to the lyric and say, oh wow, that's Jesus, or you can say, oh wow, that's my future boyfriend, you know.
Right
Either way, it is a very strange seduction that's happening in the song, isn't it?
It reminds me of that great South Park episode where the boys from South Park decide to form a Christian rock band, and their solution is to just take love songs from that day and change you to Jesus, and then they're like, job's done.
That's always been the thing with the Christian music, and I remember those Tooth and Nail bands from the 90s, and that was always the thing. Like, you weren't sure, is this a love song? Or is this a song about Jesus? That seems to have always been the thing, right?
There's an adage with U2, who, you know, the members of U2 are Christians, but they say if it seems like the song is about sex, it's actually about God. And if it seems like it's about God, it's actually about sex. And you apply that to the U2 catalog and you can sort it all out, apparently.
Right. I love Striper's yellow and black attack thing. For anyone who's listening and doesn't know about Striper, they dressed basically like bumblebees, which is another aspect on top of the fact that I believe that the number that they threw out for how many Bibles they threw out to the crowd was 500,000 Bibles were thrown from the stage to the crowd by these guys dressed like bumblebees. I mean, whether you're a Christian or not, you can't help but love this. This is really awesome.
You know who actually, it doesn't take much to know me to know that I love wrestling. So I have to bring it to wrestling for just a second. Chris Jericho, in his autobiography, actually said that Striper was still to this day one of his favorite bands, but in his early days of wrestling, he insisted that all of his gear be black and yellow as a tribute to the band.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, I'd heard that Jericho was a Striper fan, but I didn't realize that it went so deep. But yeah, it was a strange expression of faith, of Christian ethics and living. And they came right off the LA Strip. I mean, they were there with Motley Crue and Poison, and they were part of that LA scene. They were just like the Christian take on it, you know?
Which doesn't seem like a bad thing when you read the stories of bands like Motley Crue and Poison and what seems to be the worst people on earth. I come from the world of punk rock. I've been around the not greatest people in the world here and there, you know, but nothing like the stories you read about how awful these people were as human beings. So when you see people like Michael Sweet, who seem to be, whether you agree with the religious aspect or not, seem to be like pretty decent people, it seems to be an anomaly in that world, which is actually a cool thing.
Yeah, for sure.
It's one of those things where it's like the more things change, the more they stay the same. And like you look at the Striper stuff again with like how much of a controversy they were. I know Jimmy Swaggart hated them, absolutely despised this band. And again, because they would hang out with groups like Motley Crue, because they had the audacity to do that. And I can't help but think of, you know, it's not a secret that Five Iron Frenzy is one of my favorite bands. And I produce a podcast for Leonore now of Five Iron Frenzy. And she's told me a bunch of times, one of my favorite songs by them is a song called All That Is Good. And she said that song was written about her frustration about like being told that she had to only play with other Christian bands. And she was like, but I'm friends with Less Than Jake. I'm friends with these contemporary bands. And I want to like go on tour with them. And like, why are you like, wouldn't you? You would think theoretically as a church, those are the places you'd want them to be playing.
Yeah, like, I agree. Right.
Like
agree.
You want them playing for other people besides the people who are already into that stuff.
Well, and it's one of the plot points in the movie Electric Jesus. There comes a big, you know, the climax of the movie is the band has a shot. They might be able to open for Striper on a tour, but they got to play a real rock club. They got to play a place where there's booze and, you know, ribald behavior. A scary place. And so they have to make that choice, you know, are we going to do this or not? So that's very true. I think it was a very true conflict that a lot of Christian artists would have. It seems ridiculous when you think about it, just like you're saying, Matt. I mean, you're supposed to be Christians. You should be like out in the world being Christians, not just sequestered with a bunch of other, you know, like-minded church folk. You know,
right. Well, and I think that what's funny about, and again, we'll try not to spoil too much, but what I think is extra funny about that final set piece, to me anyway, is like, even if they weren't a Christian hair metal band, based on the band that's playing before them, if they were just a regular hair metal band, I don't think it was going to play out.
Oh, right.
Too well. Like the Christian thing's just like an additional hurdle because they're opening for like borderline like a Cannibal Corpse, GWAR type band.
Oh, yeah. And that's Daniel Smith, his acting debut. He plays the lead singer of that band.
Oh, really?
It's called Bloody Mass. Yeah, that's Daniel.
That's Mace, Stig Foss.
He's that shirtless brute covered in makeup. That's him.
Yeah, I had a leather cod piece with chains hanging off me. I was covered in blood, and then they threw dirt on me. It was really weird.
we were just messing with you with the dirt, Daniel. I said, just throw some dirt on him. So welcome to showbiz, kid.
Yeah.
So good. So hey, I know you said you talked to Michael Sweet. Have the guys in Striper seen Electric Jesus yet?
Yeah. Daniel and I went up with some of our producers to it was Plymouth, Massachusetts, which is very close to where Michael was living at the time. And so we they couldn't get all the band together because of COVID stuff, but we sent links to everybody in the band, but we were in the room with Michael and his wife, Lisa, as they watched the movie. And it was nerve wracking for sure. I mean, the band is treated very well in the movie. Yeah. I mean, they're gods, you know, but still to sit in the room with them and, you know, just kind of like, I think we were sitting there, Daniel, you and me and Emily were kind of sitting, just watching, you know, what are they doing? You know, are they laughing? Are they liking this? But he was very kind. He was super, super generous. We went to dinner with them and heard, you know, stories from the road. And, you know, the funny thing to me was the band in our movie, they're just a bunch of kids who aren't going to make it. You know, I like rock and roll movies where the band doesn't make it. I think those are better. So that's not a spoiler. I mean, that's the kind of movie this is. But he was just saying that, yeah, Striper's been booed and people throw stuff at the stage. And I'm like, really, man? Striper? You guys are great. And it goes back to him being a bit of a provocateur. He likes the war. He likes the battle. You know. So if the audience is like saying, you know, I hate you, he gets turned on. He's ready to go. He's like, he rocks harder, he said.
So he would play in mainstream venues then, you know, sure. which makes Striper very different from any of the other Christian bands.
Right. Yeah.
And that's something I really picked up on in the movie is that, you know, I feel like it would have been easy in a way to really make fun of, you know, what these kids in the movie were doing and the entire scene. But I feel like you really paid homage to it without making fun of it. Yeah, there were funny aspects, but I felt watching it as a person who didn't grow up with this kind of music, like, you know, a respect for it, you know, like there was a real authentic feel to that. The kids in this movie really believed in what they were doing. And this movie wasn't meant to make fun of that. It was just like an honest story about it. It was really cool.
And that's been done before, you know, the making fun of religious kids is just, to me, it's just passe. That's not interesting anymore.
Right.
Or it's just, maybe it never was interesting. I'm more like, I like getting on board with the weird people and letting them have their day. And I would say we don't make fun of Christian kids, but we have fun with Christian kids. And I think that's the difference. You know, I've watched this movie with very devout Christians, Christian musicians even, and they are touched and love it. You know, they feel seen. You know, it's like, yeah, that was us. So I think that's a win for the movie. If I can figure out how to tell you a story about some weirdos in a way that just, you know, is not necessarily promoting the weirdos, but just is listening to them and is on their side as the story's unfolding, takes them seriously.
Yeah, dude, can I tell you a thing that made me laugh really hard, which I actually believed people definitely had to have said this, and that's why you put it in there, was the scene where, what's the lead singer in the band's name?
Michael. Called Michael.
Yeah, Michael and the main character in the RV together.
Eric.
Yeah. And they are talking about, like, hey, you getting hungry? Do you want breakfast? And he's reading his Bible. What's the line? He says, like...
He said, I'm feasting on the word this morning.
Yeah, I'm feasting on the word.
And his buddy busts his balls on that. He goes, oh, you're so good.
Yeah, right. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. So funny.
I have a question I want to kind of draw to Daniel a little bit, because, you know, we've had Daniel's band was obviously on Tooth and Nail Records. He's not the first Tooth and Nail Record affiliated person that's been on One Hit Thunder. We've had people from Zao. We've had some people from Juliana Theory, some people from May. And I know that with a lot of them, I don't think Danielson, anytime that I've ever seen it, this happened, but I've heard plenty of stories from people who were in that music scene that said that there is this weird divide where you're a Christian and you're in a band, but you see yourself as an artist first and foremost. Like, you are out there creating art. You're writing songs that are important to you, but, like, you're caught up in this weird... I heard Conrad from Goaty Hook say one time, like, the quickest way to lose your faith is to not just be someone sitting in a pew at the church. And like there was some truth to that, where it's like you're seeing the behind the scenes of, like, we could play this venue and play with these bands that we really like that aren't Christian, or we could take this huge paycheck to play, like, this church that's this mega church, but we have to do a call to the front of the church for people to, like, you know, be born again. And like, a lot of bands just being like, that was really uncomfortable for me to, like, have to have to basically be musician and also like a pastor on stage for 15 minutes. Did you ever bump into stuff like that with Danielson?
Well, that was definitely an option. I remember I grew up in the culture, so I was fortunate to already have, I was already skeptical of you know, the Christian music as a scene, especially because it's just another business model. You know, it's just, it's marketed for Christians. So yeah. there's different rules you got to play by, especially then when all the records were in Christian bookstores and youth group kids were only allowed to shop in those Christian bookstores. So in a sense, it's kind of a built-in audience, and there's a much better chance that you'll sell records in that scene than if you try to break out at the time, try to break out and compete with everybody else in the mainstream culture. So, the downside of that, well, there's many downsides, but for sure it's in a bubble, just like anything else at the time in Christian culture was, this kind of, let's stick together, let's hide away in our own little culture and wait for Jesus to come back. Meanwhile, we'll let our kids go to the Christian bookstore and buy records. And it was very much this kind of fear-based thinking that also the business side of it, the Christian music market, capitalized off that big time. Now for us, I think I already was skeptical. So I didn't even want to be on a Christian label at all. It's just Tooth and Nail is the only label that wrote back. And I remember Brandon calling me. I was living at Jesus People in Chicago at the time, and he called, and I must've been on speakerphone. There's a whole group of kids in there. It turns out Damien Gerardo, I think, was there too. And Brandon's like, "Who are you? What is this?" It was the first record I sent him, Prayer for Every Hour. He said, "Who are you? What is this? What is this music?" I said, "I don't know. It's my record. Do you like it?" He's like, "Yeah, it's insane. It's like, "Oh, good. Is that a compliment?" And he said, yeah, we want to put it out. I said, "Okay, well, let's put it out as is." And so that was the beginning, and I got to give it to him. He took a chance when nobody else would. I mean, this is a 70-minute album of all cassette four-track recordings that I had made, and that was the record, and I refused to re-record it. That's the record, you like it or not. And he said, "Yeah, I'm in. Let's do this thing." And I could hear like just a bunch of people in the office laughing like I'm the Elephant Man or something, but it was great, So I got to give it to him. And in terms of the pressures, our music was just, it turned out it was kind of a little of a, like a landmine in the Christian bookstores, which at the time I didn't want to have anything to do with that scene. I'm glad it happened. I was able to just kind of get some music in that world. And at the same time, my main focus was just getting in the local indie rock, record stores and be written up in Magnet magazine or whatever. Like that's all I cared about, because that's what I was listening to. That's what I was reading. So playing clubs was always the goal. We would do these Christian coffee houses and things like that, as well as indie rock clubs. It was easier to get the Christian gigs, but I was pretty sour on that scene. So I probably should have just been a little more gracious in my mind about just kind of like playing wherever we're invited. But I'm glad it worked out the way it did, because it kind of, the music just got to go into different, really different kind of subcultures that were happening at the same time.
For sure. And I actually feel a bit for Brandon, because like, you have to give the guy credit. He clearly just signed whatever he wanted to be listening to, which is not what a lot of other record companies would do with their choices. And I think that at a certain point, the label just became known as a Christian rock label, regardless if the bands on it were like, I don't think there was a single Christian bone in Frodus, but like, just because they were on Tooth and Nail, you could buy that at a Christian bookstore, because they're just like, well, it's Tooth and Nail, so it must be that good Jesus juice, and like put it on the shelves. And it's like an anti-capitalistic like spaz rock album. But
yeah. Now, I remember we were invited to play EMI Christian Distribution Office in Nashville. We were supposed to stop over there for like an afternoon performance for the execs at EMI Christian. And they give us a tour around the offices, and there's like a little stage in the corner. And I said, we're not playing here. This is ridiculous. So we just left. That was the game. It's like, it's the Christian version of whatever the mainstream equivalent to, there was EMI and there was EMI Christian. And but I remember being there walking around and speaking with some of the salespeople and say, some of these bands are not Christians. You know that, right? It's like, they're a tough sell to, but we have our ways of getting them into the stores anyway. It's just gross.
Well, so I have a quick trivia question for everybody on the call. I'm not sure if any of you know this, but so Striper was the second Christian band to get airplay on MTV. Do you know what the first band was?
Yes. Rez.
That was not...
It wasn't?
That was not what Wiki said. It said it was their song 666, DeGarmo and Key.
Oh, wow.
That's right, DeGarmo and Key. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I know that this, you know, Striper, we're talking about this. They were, I mean, when they crossed over, that was kind of unheard of at the time, right? That was a big deal that they were
able
to do.
Yeah, and
that.
Amy Grant kind of did the same thing in short order. I mean, right after that is when Amy Grant... is really starting to be marketed as a secular pop star instead of just a Christian pop star.
Right. And if you want to know how big this Striper song got, which I got to be honest, I know I'm very well versed, I feel like, with 80s music. For some reason, I didn't really know this song. That might just be on me. And it seems like it might be, considering this song, okay, it peaked at number 23. So it didn't go to number one or anything, but it was... On January 29th, 1988, when it peaked at number 23, it was above Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up, Salt and Peppa's Push It, and it wasn't as high as She's Like the Wind. Patrick Swayze, She's Like the Wind, was a couple places higher. And the number one song at this time was In Excess, Need You Tonight. Some of the other songs on the charts were Hungry Eyes, Got My Mind Set on You, George Harrison, and The Way You Make Me Feel by Michael Jackson. So that's kind of... the musical landscape at that time, very eclectic, I will say. Yeah. It's impressive they were able to push through. I got to tell you guys, I went on to the Honestly music video, which, once again, this is, it's kind of easy to laugh at. It's like, I think it's Michael Sweet holding up a baby early in it. And I don't know. It's a very cheesy 80s video. But reading the comments on it, were pretty great. My favorite being from 8 months ago. I mean, this is this year, 8 months ago.
Right.
Lois Odenthal commented, "Daryl, this song says so much. I promise you I'll love you through the good times and the bad times. Just promise me you'll stand by me too. I love you, baby." Which I was like, wow. Lois is communicating to Daryl through the comments of a Striper video. So I kept scrolling. And so that was from 8 months ago. Then 3 months ago, from the username Lois Odenthal Daryl's Girl, a completely different name, Lois Odenthal Daryl's Girl, all one name. It says, "I want this song to go out to my boyfriend Daryl because we are going through some tough times right now. And I just want him to know that he has always been my friend regardless of what the situation is. I love you, Daryl." I really love that the comments of this Striper video are the way that Lois Odenthal is communicating with Daryl and letting Daryl know how much Lois loves Daryl.
Dude, you know. Communicate with your boy, Lois.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. There were some other great comments, like Jessica Wright saying, "This takes me back to my days of way back when I was graduating high school. This was our class song. I went to a church school, so we were allowed to have it." And Cristobal Guerrera, who noted, "I always lose it when this song is on. It's like the Lord is telling us to turn to him in times of need." So, people really do love this song. People really do love this band. But before we go, we always have to chime in on whether we believe that that the band brought the one hit thunder or was a one hit blunder. This is one of those questionable ones where, was Striper a one hit wonder? I guess they're kind of considered that, although I don't know if that's actually the case. I think that the three of you are all going to give this a thunder, I would assume.
I get what Chris is saying. It's questionable if they were ever a one hit wonder to begin with. I will say this. This song, along with their other music video, Free, was apparently the most requested song on the show Dial MTV.
Yeah.
That also doesn't feel that shocking to me, because I feel like they had that Jim Baker backing at the time, too, where I'm sure if Jim Baker went on his channel and said, "All right, kids, you got to call Dial MTV and get this video to the top," that every Christian parent would have handed their credit cards to their kids to let them as many phone calls as they could. I'll go first, I guess, and then we'll let the guests really dominate this. If we were talking about Striper, To Hell with the Devil, I'd absolutely say that this was thunder all the way. I think that that song is incredible. There's a book called Sound of the Beast, The Complete Headbangers History of Heavy Metal, and it lists it, To Hell with the Devil, as one of the landmark glam metal moments. But as far as this song is concerned, it is quite the, it is a bad song. I'm going to go ahead and just say that this is a blunder, but I do really love Striper. So Striper the band, I would say, is a thunder, but if we're just talking about this and the song, blunder all the way.
All right, all right.
What do you think, Daniel?
I think they should stick with rocking.
Yeah.
I think they're great at rocking. And I think they should leave the pop ballads to Rick Astley. I don't know. it's not a good song.
Yeah. Okay,
I'm trying to be nice.
I'm gonna say, so again, just to make it interesting, I'm gonna try to make a case for this song being thunder. We agree that Rocking Striper is thunder, but
yes,
can honestly be a thunderous success. I'm gonna say it is. And I'm gonna say it is, because it sets out to do a thing, and it does that thing really well. It sets out to create very sweet, no pun intended, Michael and Robert, but very sweet feelings and sentiment about an easy sentiment, sweet, easy feelings about your significant other or your Lord. You know, it's trying to, you know, it's letting it be both, but it gives you just a sweet, easy feeling. And I think it succeeds for the audience it was intended to, which are kids. This was not an adult contemporary song. This was a kid's song, a middle school love song, or maybe a high school love song. And I think it's hampered by those weird synth horn sounds or something. Like it's hampered by the production. Like if those were real strings, if those were real horns that you're hearing, the build, the climax it's building to at the end would be way more effective. As it is now, really you just hear Michael's kind of very high, almost, you know, a female kind of voice singing with a lot of drums. Like the drums are just dominate the production of the song. It's Michael's voice and Robert's drum. So I'm going to say, I know this is a stretch, but I'm saying, honestly, is thunder.
Well, I'm glad that one person came to this song's defense, because I think this song is terrible.
Here's a question about that, Chris.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So we could make an argument that the lyrics were doing all those things. But what was the melody doing? That's my issue.
Well, I don't know. There was a melody. I just think it was drums.
Where did the melody go?
I don't know. It was just like to heaven. It was trying to take us. It was just going. It was just saying more high into the sky. There is no melody really. I can't hum it. And,
right.
And even before this interview, I listened to it about six times. So yeah, I don't think there's much melody there for sure.
So we're not looking for melody with this hit. We're looking for
no.
drums and sentiment.
That's what I think they were trying to do. And I think they succeeded.
I can't stress enough how good Electric Jesus is. And also, before we go, I have to say that I think everything is cool and awesome about Striper except this song. I think everything else about Striper is cool as hell, and I like everything about them except this song is the exception.
I think there might be some Striper fans that would agree with you. In fact, the band might agree with you.
Okay,
on that.
Yeah.
I don't know that this is their favorite song from their catalog.
Right.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Vithalios of the bands Punchline, Pack, and Another Cheetah, and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net.
Underneath me, you're hearing Commando for Christ from the new film Electric Jesus. The movie is streaming now, and you should watch it. Punchline is playing Antifest on November 20th at the Roxanne Theater in Pittsburgh. Come and check out the show and say hello to us if you see us there. Do you want to hear your band's song on our show? Or do you have interest in sponsoring an episode? Contact me at matt@geekscape.net for our rates. And if you have any interest in podcasting, visit weknowpodcasting.com for how Chris and I can make your show sound as professional as possible. Let us know your thoughts on the show by emailing us at onehitthunderpodcast@gmail.com. And make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app. Tune in next week for another episode of One Hit Thunder.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.